Lowe's knows laundry day should be easy. Achieve maximum versatility with a dryer door that swings open either way, making load transfer from washer to dryer a breeze. Plus, with LG ThinQ, save time by controlling your washer remotely. Shop LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances, today at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.
What's your secret that could literally ruin your life if it came out? Story 1. Well, it's more of a secret to my friends that I've made recently. Some background first. I don't like being touched or hugged, and I'm incredibly uncomfortable with intimacy in general. When I was in the 8th grade, a group of girls in my class convinced me they had a friend who liked me. They said she had seen me somewhere and thought I was cute. They faked an MSN account and talked to me every night for a few months, invited me out to the movies, and, obviously, didn't show up. Then they revealed to the whole grade that I had been tricked into having an imaginary girlfriend. I was mocked viciously by everyone in the grade, and ever since then, I can't really trust women. I also can't believe that a girl may have feelings for me. Even when they explicitly tell me they like me, I can't help but feel like they're trying to trick me. It's caused a lot of insecurity, and I can't get attached to people easily. I'm terribly afraid to text or message people first because I'm convinced I would be annoying them. What's worse is that when I think about it, I know it probably isn't true, but I can't help but feel like it is. Even though it was grade 8, it was around the time when attraction to women was just starting to feel real. So being hurt at such a delicate time has really done some damage. The secret, of course, is that I had been dumb enough to be tricked. As you might suspect, the whole thing has left me afraid of being vulnerable. If my newer friends, as in university friends, found out, it would put me in a really uncomfortable place. I probably wouldn't be able to be their friend anymore. Thanks for reading. You're the first people I've told about what this event has actually done to me. Edit. I know people still read this thread, so I felt I owed everyone an update. I've since met such a fantastic woman, someone who makes me incredibly happy. I love her very much. She loves me. And she's helping me get used to the idea of feeling valuable and trusting people, or at least one person. She's the best thing that's happened to me in a long time, maybe ever. I'm glad I got to come back to this post and finish it off with a happy ending. To all the people in the comments who were kind to me, or who shared their own similar experiences, you're always valuable, and someone will notice. Story 2. I run a cake business. I charge people hundreds for wedding cakes. Every last one is made using Pillsbury cake mix I buy for $1 a box at Walmart. I suck at baking. Every time I've tried to make a cake from scratch, it turned out terrible. But baking is like my whole thing. My friends all call me the cake girl. It's like my whole life is a lie. People compliment my cakes all the time, telling me how delicious they are and how much better they taste than box mix cakes. They say they could never bake a cake so delicious. Well, guess what? For $1, they too can make a cake just as good. Just add oil, eggs, and water. In my defense, I love cake decorating. I make all of the frostings and fondant from scratch. I just hate baking cakes. I base my prices mostly on the decoration of the cakes rather than the cake itself, if that makes sense. Still, no one knows about this except my husband. Even my best friends think I slave over the oven, mixing and baking these cakes. I've been doing this for years. If anyone found out, my business and reputation would be in the toilet for sure. I keep telling myself I have to learn how to make the cakes from scratch, but I never do it. Sometimes I feel like such a sham. Story 3. This is my old account, so I might as well throw it away. While on deployment, I killed a man in a coup de grace. The feeling of taking a man's life always weighs heavily on me every day. No one likes hurting people. He had been hit by some of our mobile artillery. While part of me wanted the bastard to suffer, it wasn't right. My medic was busy with our wounded, and as the officer on duty, I took out my 45 and put one in his head. I knew my boys wouldn't say anything. Most just watched, accepted it as a fact of war, and kept walking. I remember throwing up afterward. I came home, and everyone acted like I was a hero. I never felt like more of a sham in my entire life. Story 4. First time telling anyone this. This thread is so deep that probably no one will see it, but if one person does, I'll feel better. I am basically living a lie. I told my entire family that I was able to transfer out of community college and into a university, but I never finished the requirements. So, since I live at home, every day instead of going to school, I go to the local library and just hang out. My lies are so extensive that I even go to the campus and meet my girlfriend for lunch sometimes. I've made fake transcripts to show my family, and to make it look like I'm actually studying, I go to MIT OpenCourseWare to look up facts that I learned in class that day. I have become a remarkable liar. I hope to be transferring in the fall, and then I look forward to living a normal life. Coming clean is not an option at this point. Story 5. This isn't necessarily something that could ruin my life, but it could ruin many others. I haven't told anyone before. My father recently went to prison for a white-collar crime that he pleaded guilty to. He didn't commit this crime, but the alternative was fighting a highly sensationalized, media-obsessed scapegoat case and potentially getting 20-plus years. While he was in prison, I read his little blue book, which I knew contained all the missteps of everyone he's worked with. He has always been an extremely scrupulous man, so these offenses were something he took seriously enough to note. I have information on countless state employees, incredibly prominent and wealthy community members, numerous elected city-state officials, and police officers. This information could ruin lives and spark political controversy. My father is an incredible man and not vengeful whatsoever. He will never use any of this info against these people, despite the fact that most completely turned on him, stayed uninvolved at all costs, or started pointing fingers. When I picture my aging father sitting in a maximum security jail cell, sleeping on a metal sheet without a mattress, he wasn't given one until his fifth night, I am filled with rage for these people who could have stood up for their friend and prevented this while he still continues to be loyal. I still haven't decided which campaigns, if any, I'm going to ruin in the upcoming elections. Story 6. Buried comment, but here goes. Not life-ruining, but it makes me feel terrible every time I think about it. As I've mentioned before, I have a blind brother. When we were young, I used to get so frustrated with all the extra attention he received and how I had to be more responsible with my sibling than my peers. So, when my brother and I would go play, go to the store, or just generally go anywhere without adults, I would abandon him somewhere unfamiliar to him. Then, I would stand off quietly and watch as the anxiety set in while he tried to figure out where he was and what was going on. Also, I was really intelligent as a child and knew that was my ticket to attention. When I would help my brother with his homework, I would teach him all the wrong answers so that I could continue being seen as the smarter sibling. Today, my brother is my best friend. He goes to college and lives independently. He's become one of the most intelligent men I've ever met. I'm trying to make it up to him now by being the best big sister ever. But I still feel so guilty about how I saw him as a burden when I was a kid. Story 7. I faked having a chronic pain condition for 5.5 years in order to avoid attending middle school and high school. I was placed on a homebound program, not homeschooling, and was allowed to study at my own pace from home. I managed to fool a team of medical professionals, my family, my teachers, and my friends into believing that my symptoms were real. Additionally, I racked up over $100,000 in medical bills for my family. That's just what the insurance didn't cover during those 5.5 years. I didn't realize the extent of the medical bills until late into my lie, and that was one of the main reasons I decided enough was enough. Upon graduating from high school and getting accepted into a good university, I decided that it was time for my pain to disappear. No one questioned the fact that my symptoms vanished overnight. My medical team attributed it to the fact...
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
That I was nearing the end of puberty. What I did was a terrible thing, and my family continues to drown in debt from the medical bills. I plan to pay them back someday. I originally started the hoax because I was a 12-year-old who absolutely loathed middle school. I attempted to end the lie at the beginning of every school year, but eventually fell back into claiming that my pain prevented me from attending. Today, I feel horrible about what I did, and I desperately want to come clean. But I know that if I do, I will lose all credibility. Story 8. What you did is not as bad as you think. In fact, it's what most teenagers would have done given your situation. You were just a kid, and you had no idea how serious things could get. Your mind couldn't comprehend someone doing what your friend did. You were innocent and received a harsh dose of reality at a young age. You weren't responsible for his death. He didn't plan suicide at the last minute, nor did he suddenly wake up one day and decide to end his life. This had been building up for months, possibly years. You probably couldn't have stopped him, even if you had been the most supportive person ever. There are professional suicide counselors who can't always help someone deeply committed to the idea of dying. In any case, and this may sound harsh, it's over. It's done. Your life is what matters now. I understand wanting your friend's parents to believe that he found some comfort before he died, but I can't imagine that anyone who truly cares about you would think less of you for being honest about what happened. You clearly carry a lot of guilt, given your statement that it could literally ruin your life if it came out. Stop punishing yourself. You don't have to carry this guilt forever. Your friend's choice shows that one person isn't meant to bear such heavy burdens alone. Find someone to talk to. Story 9. I faked the last 2 years of my college education. My parents put so much pressure on me that I couldn't handle it. I was struggling with severe depression and anxiety, so I lied. I fabricated transcripts and convinced everyone that I had completed my degree. Eventually, I managed to get a job in my desired field thanks to a friend who recommended me. The company only hires college graduates, but because of the recommendation, no one bothered to double-check my credentials. Now, I've been working there for several years, and I'm actually good at my job. Still, I'm terrified that someday the truth will come out and ruin everything. I hope that by the time I need to move on to a new job, I'll have enough experience to be hired based on my skills rather than my education. It's a relief to finally admit it, even if just here. I can't tell my loved ones, and keeping this secret feels like living in a self-made prison. Story 10. I came very close to committing a school shooting. In high school, I was bullied relentlessly. I tried hard to fit in, but everyone saw through it, and that just made things worse. There were four guys, cowboy jock types, who were the worst. One day, after being publicly humiliated and beaten in front of a girl I liked, who laughed and cheered, I reached my breaking point. I had no support at home, being an only child with parents who were always working. Self-harm wasn't helping anymore. So, I got my dad's handgun from the gun safe. He used the same combination for everything and brought it to school. I can't adequately explain how ready I was to do it. I had no fear or doubt. I wanted to make them pay for pushing me over the edge. I tucked the gun into my waistline, hidden under a pair of baggy cargo shorts. As I approached their table, the gun slipped out of my shorts and hit the cafeteria floor with a loud clatter. People saw it, screamed, and one of the staff members tackled me to the ground. The school eventually concluded that I had brought the gun to show off and had no real intention of using it. I was expelled and sent to a youth ranch in Idaho until I turned 18. But the truth is, I did plan to use it. I was going to kill them. I'm 24 now, and I still think about it all the time. I haven't recovered from high school. I'm still terrified of people and avoid relationships because I'm afraid of what I might be capable of. I'm not looking for pity. I know what I almost did was wrong. It just feels good to finally tell someone. Story 11. I'm a guy in my late 20s who was taken into care at age 7. Everyone around me knows that I grew up in foster families because I had a rough early childhood. I usually keep it vague and say things like, I'd rather not go into it, so people just assume I was abused in some way, and stop asking questions. The truth is that for the first 7 years of my life, I was raised as a girl by my birth mother, who was obsessed with having a daughter. Despite giving birth to a boy, she refused to accept it and decided to raise me as a girl. She was a successful professional in a legal field, I'm not sure exactly what, and had me through an anonymous sperm donor from a fertility clinic. After finding out I was a boy during a late ultrasound, she moved across the country, gave birth to me at home, and continued to move frequently until I was about 5. It was just the two of us, and although we interacted with others, they never got too close. I had friends, but I was always closely supervised. Later, I found out that her strict puritanical Christianity was just a cover story to explain why I was always so private and why no one could see me change clothes. I accepted it as normal because I didn't know any different. She enrolled me in a religious school for girls, and I had a happy childhood there. I was a bit of a tomboy, playing with Lego and toy animals rather than dolls, but no one questioned my identity, not even me. I vaguely thought that when I grew up and developed, my male parts would just go away and I'd become a woman. It wasn't something I dwelled on much. Everything was fine, until one day, when I was 7, a teacher accidentally spilled hot coffee on me at school. The staff immediately stripped me out of my dress and underwear to prevent burns, and that's when they discovered the truth. Social services got involved, and my mother was taken in for questioning. She insisted I was her daughter, refusing to acknowledge my male identity. Because of her delusion, I wasn't allowed to return home and was placed with a foster family. I underwent a lot of therapy. The hardest part was losing everything overnight. My mother, my home, my toys, my clothes, my school, and my friends. They cut my hair short and told me I wasn't a girl anymore. It was unbelievably traumatic. The first foster family wasn't great. They already had 3 boys, and I struggled to adjust from a sheltered, religious, only child upbringing to a chaotic, masculine environment. They tried to force me to be masculine, and I was just too confused to understand what they wanted. Anything remotely girly was punished, and I felt completely lost. I attempted suicide at 11 and again at 13 because I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. After the second attempt, I was moved to a new foster family who were incredible. I consider them my real parents. They supported me and allowed me to grow my hair out, something I had longed for since I was taken into care. They didn't force me into sports like karate and football, but let me take up swimming and jazz dance instead. For the first time, someone stood up for my right to choose how I expressed myself. Eventually, I developed a healthy gender identity. I'm a guy, maybe not the most masculine, but I'm okay with that. I finished school, earned a degree, and now have a great job and an amazing, supportive wife. Life turned out well, but I can never talk about how I grew up as a little girl. It's something I carry alone. Story 12. I lose sleep every night because I feel like I was a terrible brother. My younger sibling is 5 years younger than me, and I always felt like I was a lousy role model and a bad example for him. I treated him poorly and really affected his childhood in a negative way. Now, he's one of my best friends, but we both know what happened, and I can never forgive myself for it. I see other people confessing to worse things, like near sewage and other dark stories, but that doesn't make this any easier for me. I love my brother, and I would take a bullet for him, but not a day goes by where I don't wish I could go back in time and change how I treated him. I don't usually believe in regrets, but this one will always weigh on me. Story 13. I'm an IT guy, and it's honestly incredible what people will do on their computers and say in their emails despite signing a waiver stating that all computer activity at work is monitored and recorded. I have access to a lot of sensitive information, half the company's banking details, social media accounts, personal email info, and passwords. I know who's having secret affairs with colleagues behind their spouses' backs. I know who is engaging in explicit online chats at work and then running off to the bathroom to handle themselves. At least, that's what they tell their chat partners. I haven't felt the need to verify that one. I'm also aware of people dealing with marital problems, financial issues, and even one case where an employee had their kids taken away after a social worker found coca in their house. I know who is embezzling money, and when employees get fired for shady reasons, like wanting to replace them with someone younger and more attractive. I also know that my boss is buying Xanax and Vicodin from a coworker. Basically, I have a vault of my coworkers' secrets. I have no intention of using this information against anyone, but it's oddly reassuring to know that I have it, just in case something ever goes down. Story 14. Not something that ruined my life, but it's my one big secret. I doubt anyone will see this, but that's okay. I was about 23, working late one evening. My friend, who is gay, kept insisting that we go out. I'm not gay, but he eventually convinced me. We ended up at a small dive bar, just hanging out and chatting. A couple of other friends were supposed to join us, but they never showed up. I was nursing my first gin and tonic when I went to the bathroom. When I came back, I finished my drink, and that's when everything started feeling strange. I realized something was wrong, so I ordered water for my next drink, but it didn't help. My world was spinning, and I couldn't control my body. My memory from that point is pretty fragmented. I remember resting my head on the bar and him touching me inappropriately. I vaguely recall him helping me to his car, dragging me up some stairs, me passing out on the floor, and then him doing things to me. At one point, I remember being back in his car, and the next thing I knew, I woke up in my own bed. I felt awful. And to my surprise, my car was in the driveway. I had no idea how it got there. At some point during the night, I had left a rambling, incoherent voicemail on my best friend's phone. I was assaulted, but I was so embarrassed that I never told anyone, not even my wife. She knows something happened, but not the full extent of it. I just couldn't bring myself to say it out loud. Story 15. When I was about 12, I went to Family Dollar with my mom and cousins. While they went off to look at groceries, I decided to hang out in the toy aisle. There were always bags of marbles scattered around that other kids had opened, so I started flicking some of them across the floor. One of them rolled into a far-off aisle. A couple of minutes later, I heard a loud crash and someone shout, "Somebody help this man!" Curious, I ran over to see what was going on. A crowd had gathered around a man who had fallen off a ladder while reaching for something on the top shelf. He was having a seizure. Blood was coming from his head, and his face was turning blue. My mom quickly took me and my cousins away, and we left the store. The next time we went back, we asked the cashier what had happened. She said they called the paramedics, but by the time they arrived, the man had already passed away. Apparently, he had choked during the seizure. The cashier mentioned that the cause of the fall was the ladder slipping on a marble that the man hadn't noticed. When I heard that, I froze, thinking I was going to get into trouble. I tried to tell my mom several times, but she kept insisting that I was just imagining it. To this day, I still feel guilty about what happened. Story 16. This secret could ruin several lives, not just mine. I was a rebellious kid and didn't get along with my family or anyone from my hometown, so I left home as soon as I turned 18. I spent almost a year couch surfing, relying on friends and acquaintances I met through online communities. Eventually, I found a business opportunity in California, settled down, and started a serious relationship with a woman named May. We dated for 3.5 years, and those were some of the best years of my life. Eventually, though, she wanted more commitment, and I wasn't ready, so we broke up. 6 years later, I got a call from my younger brother saying he was getting married and wanted me to be his best man. I flew back home 2 weeks before the wedding, and during a family dinner, he introduced me to his fiancée, May. We both acted like we didn't know each other, trying to keep things calm. When my brother got pulled away for a moment, May and I started talking, and the conversation flowed effortlessly, just like old times. We ended up walking to the old dried-up pond at the edge of my parents' property, reminiscing and reconnecting. The emotions overwhelmed us, and despite knowing it was wrong, we ended up being intimate on the old dock. Over the next few days, while my brother was at work, I visited his apartment, and May and I continued the affair. Eventually, the intensity of the situation hit us, and we decided to stop before it went any further. The wedding went off without a hitch, even though I felt guilty the entire time. I just wanted to get back to California as soon as possible, and after seeing the happy couple off, that's exactly what I did. Then, 5 months after the wedding, May called me. She told me she was pregnant. She mentioned that she and my brother hadn't been intimate for about a month before the wedding due to personal issues, only resuming during the honeymoon, 3 days after the wedding. According to her, the baby was mine. We both agreed to keep it a secret and let my brother believe he was the father. Now, the kid's first birthday is coming up, and I still don't know if I made the right choice. I talk to my brother often, and he seems happy. So I've convinced myself that ignorance is bliss. I just try not to think about the reality of the situation, but it never fully leaves my mind. Story 17. It wouldn't necessarily ruin my life since some people already know, but I did try to end my life once while I was in college. My plan was to take Tylenol along with a handle of vodka, aiming to induce organ failure and alcohol poisoning. When I was about to go through with it, the cheap alcohol made me more aware of my actions, and I ended up spitting it out. I immediately ran to my friend's room to apologize, since I had stolen the alcohol from him. It was the only time I knowingly took something that wasn't mine. This happened about 2 years ago. After that incident, I had to take a year off from college and was forced to explain the situation to the adults in my life. For the first time, they learned that I had been sexually assaulted by my older brothers for about 5 years, and that I had been struggling with depression for nearly a decade. They didn't understand. They couldn't grasp why I was still affected by something that happened so long ago. They thought I was just making excuses to drop out of my dream college, or that I wasn't strong enough to handle it. When I finally convinced them to let me see a therapist, they kept questioning how long it would take, and dismissed it as pointless. I did return to college eventually, but left again because the depression became too much to handle. Now, the verbal abuse at home has gotten worse. Almost every day I hear how I've ruined my life, how I'm just making excuses, and how I'm a failure. I desperately want to leave, but I have no job, no money, and nowhere to go. I can't afford an apartment or therapy, and I feel trapped in this hostile environment. I'm so tired of being mistreated, and I want to break free, but it feels impossible. I'm afraid that I'll never become the person I want to be, because I'm too busy trying not to fall back into depression. I try to stay neutral by avoiding challenges or deep thoughts, but it's exhausting. Story 18. I killed a guy and made it look like a suic. It was a Friday, and Fridays are my turn to pick up my daughter from school. I got there and waited outside. She was late, which wasn't unusual. Usually, she'd be talking to friends or something. I didn't want to interrupt. Plus, the traffic leaving the school was always terrible, so waiting wasn't a big deal. I sent her a text to let her know I was in the parking lot and to come out when she was ready. She didn't respond, which was odd. After 45 minutes, I started getting frustrated. Waiting that long was ridiculous. I called her a few times, but she didn't pick up. Annoyed, I got out of my car and started looking for her. The school seemed empty, except for a few teachers and janitors. I searched everywhere, even went to the principal's office to ask them to make an announcement for her to come to the office. After 10 more minutes with no sign of her, I started to worry. I began walking around the neighborhood, going up and down the streets. About 5 blocks from the school, I passed an alley and saw someone lying on the ground, motionless. My heart stopped. Running closer, I saw it was my daughter, unconscious, barely breathing. Her pants and underwear were pulled down, and there was blood on her thighs and the ground. She had bruises on her arms, legs, and face, and her head was bleeding from a wound. I called the police, and an ambulance arrived within 5 minutes. The paramedics were working on her while I stood there, terrified. They took her to the hospital, and I called my wife to meet us there. When my wife arrived, she was in tears. The doctors confirmed what we already knew. My daughter had been assaulted. A few hours later, my daughter regained consciousness. She was distant, staring into space, barely responding to questions. The police tried to talk to her, but she claimed she didn't know who attacked her. I knew she was lying, protecting someone. The police filed their report and let us go home. My daughter wasn't the same after that. She became quiet and withdrawn, a complete contrast to her usual warm and talkative self. Her friends stopped coming around, except for one guy, a cocky 18-year-old with a faux hawk who always wore muscle shirts. They would hang out in the kitchen until I got home, then go up to the roof of our apartment building. I started asking my daughter questions about him since she was 16 and he was 18. She claimed she didn't like him, but I didn't believe her. One Saturday night, while my wife and daughter were out shopping, I went into her room and found her diary. What I read shattered me. The guy with the faux hawk was the one who assaulted her. She wrote about how he apologized and felt depressed, and she wanted to comfort him because she still felt some connection to him. I didn't confront her or tell my wife. I just let him keep coming over, pretending I didn't know. This routine continued for a few more weeks. One Saturday night, while my wife and daughter were out shopping again, the guy showed up at our door looking for my daughter. I told him she wasn't home, but invited him in. We chatted, and I found out he lived a few floors above us. I suggested he wait on the roof, and I would let my daughter know when she got back. He agreed. After about 10 minutes, I couldn't contain my rage anymore. I went up to the roof and found him waiting. When he saw me, he seemed to sense something was wrong. I walked up to him and said, "I know what you did to my daughter." His eyes filled with tears, and he mumbled, "Sorry." That was it. The fury took over. I rushed at him, grabbed him, and pushed him off the roof. I watched his body hit the ground. Then I quickly went back downstairs to my apartment. About 30 minutes later, the cops showed up, questioning everyone. They asked if I knew him, and I said he was a friend of my daughter's. When my wife and daughter got home, they questioned her, and she told them he had been feeling very depressed. Eventually, the police ruled it a suicide, Story 19. This will probably get buried, but I just need to get this out. I've been contemplating suicide for months now. I had an affair with a married man, and as soon as it started, he left his wife to be with me. We are deeply in love, and we plan on getting married someday. Despite feeling so good about our relationship, the guilt from how it began has been eating me alive. When my friends found out, they completely cut me off. They labeled me as a homewrecker. And since I'm still in school, and he moved to another city for a job, our long-distance relationship has left me feeling incredibly lonely. He knows how hard it is for me, especially with all the people at my small college who used to be my closest friends. Now, they glare at me and openly gossip about me, acting like I don't notice. Transferring schools isn't an option since I'm almost finished. The guilt from the affair and the rejection from my peers have been crushing me for over a year and a half, even though the affair itself ended when he left his wife. We've been together since then, but I still can't move past it. I know I need counseling, and I plan to get help once I graduate. Just putting this out into the void where someone might read it makes me feel a tiny bit better. Story 20. I've just finished my first year of university. In the fall, my funds dried up quickly, even though my parents make a combined salary of about $200,000 a year. My brother has become the pride of our small town since he earned a full-ride scholarship to play lacrosse in the USA. We're Canadian. My parents spend everything on him, tutors, equipment, doing everything they can to support his dreams. I am genuinely happy for him, but this year changed my life completely. By November, I had no money left. I worked every single day on top of school, but I could barely cover my phone bills. I stole food from my roommates and grocery stores whenever I got the chance. When things got really bad, I put an ad on Craigslist. I sold the most personal part of myself just to get some cash from men who carried crumpled bills in their back pockets. It was the lowest point of my life. I had been sexually abused when I was younger, so even being intimate with my boyfriend is emotionally challenging. Advertising myself to older men, married men, and anyone in between just to survive broke me in ways I can't explain. My biggest fear is that my family, or my boyfriend of 2 years, will find out about this dark chapter. The shame and guilt pushed me into a deep depression, and I still take medication to cope. The thought of going back to school in September makes me cry. I'm terrified that this secret will come out, and I don't know how to face it. Story 21. This story isn't as bad as some others here, but I actually find it pretty funny. It's something my half-sister once told me, and I probably won't do it justice, but here it goes. When my half-sister was growing up, she hated her stepdad, my real dad. I personally think he's a great guy, just a bit eccentric. But back then, he was a little harsh and weird with my mom's other kids. My sister and he get along fine now, but at the time, she really didn't like him. One of the things that bugged her the most was his morning routine. Every morning, like clockwork, he would get up, grab the newspaper, and make freshly squeezed orange juice for himself, my mom, and me. I was about 4 at the time. But not for my half-sister, who was 16. It was just plain mean. He would then go through his routine, using the bathroom, shaving, showering, and then coming back to drink his OJ and eat breakfast. My sister really wanted that glass of orange juice, and she used to get back at him in small ways, like hogging the shower so he'd be late, or writing messages like, "I loathe you," on the steamed-up bathroom mirror. But one day, she decided to take it up a notch. She waited for him to finish making the OJ and go to the bathroom. Then, she snuck out, drank half of his glass, and, here's the kicker, filled the rest with her pee. She carefully set the glass back in its place and waited. Then she sat down and watched as he came back and drank every last drop, clearly savoring it. She told me that after that, nothing mean he did ever really got to her again. Whenever he acted up, she would just smile to herself and think, "You drank my piss, and you loved it." After that incident, their relationship actually improved, probably because she didn't take his antics seriously anymore. Nowadays, they have a great relationship. She once asked me when she should tell him about it, and I said, "Only on his deathbed." So that's something to look forward to. Story 22. I've never told anyone about this, not even my parents, who would accept me no matter what. Since I was 10, I've been constantly contorting my facial features to disguise how I really look. I have naturally droopy eyes, big lips for a guy, and an overbite. Every day, I squint my eyes, curl my upper lip when I smile, and jut out my lower jaw just enough to change the shape of my face. I've done it so consistently that most people think I'm conventionally handsome now, but without those adjustments, I look completely different. When I realized how strange this habit was as a teenager, I became terrified that people would notice. I'd avoid sitting on anyone's left side because the right side of my face was harder to control. I also hated having my picture taken, a fear I still have to some extent. These habits, coupled with deep depression, made my teenage years full of confusion and self-loathing. Over time, I perfected the act. When I started university, I reinvented myself as a confident, charming guy. Most people bought into it, but on bad days, the mask would slip, and I'd panic. When one of my close friends took her own life 2 years ago, it shattered my sense of identity. I ended up in a relationship with a girl who also had severe self-esteem issues due to childhood abuse. I got her into therapy and eventually broke up with her, only to jump into another relationship, desperate for some kind of stability. I tell my current girlfriend that I love her, but I don't feel it. Now, at 21, I constantly battle anxiety and a disconnect from who I really am. I can't reconcile the difference between my real face and the one I've created. I'm terrified of letting go of this habit because I don't know how it would affect me physically or mentally. If I ever decide to let go, it will have to be gradual. Sometimes I wonder if anyone else goes through this. I haven't found any similar stories online, and I feel trapped behind this mask I've crafted. I'm scared that if I lose control, people will see the real me, the shadowed figure behind the mask, and I'm terrified of what that would mean for who I really am. Story 23. Honestly, I've been waiting for a thread like this to come up. I've never shared this with any of my friends, not because I don't trust them, but because I don't think they would understand. When I was in middle and high school, my mom, sister, and I lived with my stepfather because the school district was better. For a few years, things were okay. But then he started to change. He got crazy. Whenever my mom left for work, my sister and I were left alone with him until he left for his second shift job. It started with him yelling at us for no good reason. Sure, there was always a reason, but it was always something insignificant. My sister and I were terrified whenever it happened. Then it escalated. He started hitting us almost every day. Again, it was always over something trivial. One time, I hung one of his shirts with the hanger hook facing left instead of right, and that set him off. Sometimes his anger was so intense that he would grab whichever one of us was in his way and pin us against the wall by the throat, holding us off the ground. My mom didn't know any of this. My stepfather knew how to hit us without leaving marks, and he was an unbelievably good liar. Whenever we tried to tell our mom, he'd lie his way out of it. The only time his aggressive side slipped in front of her, he blamed it on his heart medication. When my sister turned 18, she moved out, but I still had 3 more years to go. After that, all his rage was directed at me. One night during my senior year, I genuinely feared for my life and ran into the woods next to the house, hiding there until my mom got home. That was the breaking point. She finally believed me. We made plans to leave as soon as I graduated. When my mom told him she wanted to leave, he blamed me, claiming I was the reason his marriage was falling apart. Those last few months were pure hell, but in June of last year, we finally moved out. Now, I'm in college, far away from him. I don't hold any malice against him, but I can't forgive what he put me through. Just getting this off my chest feels like a huge relief. Even if no one reads this, it's good to finally let it out. Story 24. I've struggled with serious depression my whole life. I've had 3 minor suic attempts and countless thoughts of just hitting the gas pedal and crashing into a wall. A few years ago, I lost my job, and it sent me to the lowest point I've ever been. I ended up taking a crappy job at a grocery store just to get by. Around that time, I found out my wife was pregnant. I convinced myself that the best thing for her and the baby would be for me not to be around anymore. I had made up my mind that my last day would be soon. One night, my wife told me that our baby was the size of a sweet pea. I smiled and acted happy, but in my head, I was thinking that I would never meet that sweet pea. The next morning, near the end of my shift, I was in the frozen department, feeling completely broken. I closed my eyes and thought, "What's the point? It's time to end this." Then, out of nowhere, I heard someone yell my wife's name, loudly, twice. I looked around and saw a lady with the same name as my wife. I thought it was just a coincidence. Then I looked down and realized I was holding a box of sweet peas. Right then, I broke down crying. I went home, told my wife everything, and finally got the help I needed. That little sweet pea is 2 years old now and has a sister on the way. I live for them. They saved me. No matter how bad it gets, there are people out there who love you and want to help. Don't be afraid to ask. Stay strong and stay alive for the ones who love you. Story 25. After my freshman year of high school, I was sent to military school in the Midwest for 2 months. The reason? I got a D in algebra. Not because of any behavioral issues. Looking back, I can see how my parents thought it was a good idea. And they really are great people. I was just angry at the time. My dad is Jewish, and my mom is Catholic. But back then, I identified much more with my Jewish heritage. One day, I let it slip that I was Jewish, and that's when my world became a living nightmare. I started getting beaten up on a daily basis. The worst of it came toward the end when the ringleader of the group decided to crucify me. They tied me to 2 brooms that they had formed into a makeshift crucifix and proceeded to beat, sodomize, and whip me with anything they could find. I've never told anyone the full truth about that night. I shared bits and pieces with my parents and my best friend, but I never mentioned the crucifixion part. It just felt too heavy to put on anyone else. For about 7 years, I blocked out the entire memory. It wasn't until I went to a psychologist for ADD testing 2 years ago that the memory came flooding back. I think that experience is probably what sparked my atheism early on. There are times when I'm almost grateful it happened because it made me realize the depth of pure, blind hatred that can exist. I survived it. At first, when the memory returned, I was severely depressed because I just couldn't understand how someone could hate another person or group so intensely. It still confuses me, but I've accepted that some people are just filled with hate. Since then, I've made it my mission to counteract that kind of negativity. Every single day, I try to spread kindness and compassion, and I will continue to do so for the rest of my life. Story 26. I'm probably way too late to share this, but I'll post anyway. I'm an atheist. I'm also a deacon in an evangelical church. I'm not exactly proud of it, but I try to do my part to encourage people to live like Jesus because, regardless of whether he was God, his teachings about love and compassion are valuable. The real problem for me is my family. I'm married with 1 kid and another on the way. Coming out as an atheist would be devastating for my wife. I've tried hinting at it in subtle ways, but I just can't bring myself to say it outright. I love her deeply and don't want to hurt her emotionally. To add some context, my dad is a minister and a missionary and pretty well known in his area. Coming out would impact him too, and he would struggle to accept it. My mom works for a religious newspaper, and although I think she's lost most of her faith, it would be even harder for her to admit it publicly. I've never really felt close to God or anything spiritual. For the longest time, I thought something was wrong with me. By the time I finally admitted to myself that I didn't believe, I was already married with my first kid, about 4 years ago. As a deacon, I'm more of a helper to the pastor and a representative of the congregation rather than clergy. I don't deliver sermons or lead the church, but I visit sick members and provide assistance when the pastor isn't available. Even so, being in this role while secretly being an atheist feels like living a lie. I've heard of the Clergy Project, and I might look into it, but I'm not sure if they accept deacons. For now, I just keep going through the motions, trying to balance my love for my family with the truth I've discovered about myself. Story 27. Back in the mid to late 1990s, I had a roommate from Amsterdam. We were really into smoking good weed, so one year we decided to take a trip to the Cannabis Cup there. While we were in Amsterdam, I met a lot of his friends and relatives. Some of them were outright criminals, which wasn't unusual there. Several of his close friends were drug dealers, selling all kinds of things, including ecstasy. One night, we wanted to roll, so one of his friends came over with two huge bags of pills and told us to take as many as we wanted. We grabbed a bunch and still had plenty left over to take home. Once we got back, some friends offered to buy what we had left, and they went fast. A few months later, my roommate decided to go back to Amsterdam for a holiday, and I went with him. We saw the same guy again, and I mentioned how popular the pills were back home. He suggested sending more if we had interested buyers, and that's how it all started. The first few shipments went smoothly. We mailed pills mixed with large boxes of candy, but as demand grew, we had to increase both the number of shipments and the quantity per shipment. Eventually, packages started getting intercepted, so we switched methods. The most efficient way turned out to be using mules, professionals who would swallow the pills wrapped in condoms or wear specially made vests with pills sewn in. A single mule could carry about 8,000 pills, but it was risky due to random pat-downs at the airport. Business was booming, and money was flowing. Oddly enough, it was harder to move the cash out of the country than it was to bring the pills in. I kept a low profile, but my roommate loved to show off, which started causing tension between us. He began hanging out with the wrong crowd, and one of those guys, fresh out of jail, got set up during a large deal. He was caught along with our entire supply. Desperate and reckless, my roommate tried to fly back to Amsterdam himself to bring more. High out of his mind, he duct-taped a bag of pills to his inner thigh and boarded the plane. He even took some pills during the flight. Unsurprisingly, he got busted. His friends in Amsterdam weren't pleased. They reached out to me, frustrated with how his desire to be a big shot was putting everything at risk. They asked me to take over, but they still sent him small amounts to keep him satisfied without letting him know I was handling the business. As the operation grew, I involved another friend, Mike, who had connections with a major trafficker. We set up a meeting at the trafficker's compound, a massive place with armed guards and even a private zoo. It felt surreal, like something out of a movie. They liked the pills, and Mike's contact, Steve, was supposed to talk to his dad about the opportunity. But then, things went sideways. Steve disappeared, and we couldn't reach him. Meanwhile, Mike spiraled out of control, popping pills nonstop, wandering around the hotel shirtless and babbling incoherently. I had to get him out of there before the hotel staff called the police. I hid him in another hotel and tried to keep things under control. Then, while trying to catch a bus out of the city, we saw military police searching everyone boarding. It felt like a setup. Thinking fast, I faked being sick, forcing myself to puke loudly to attract attention. I made a scene and ran back to the bus station like I was heading to the bathroom, but instead grabbed a taxi and got out of there. We later found out that Steve's dad was furious when Steve mentioned the deal and had sent him away. His dad was powerful, with connections to the police and military, so we suspected the bus search was his doing. We were stuck in the country with thousands of pills and no idea how to get rid of them. We moved between shady hotels, growing more paranoid by the day. At one point, we ended up staying in a literal whorehouse, jumping at every scream, convinced someone had found us. I got sick one day and thought we had been poisoned. Paranoia took over. I decided I couldn't take it anymore, packed my stuff, and took the first flight home. Turned out I just had food poisoning. I went to the doctor the next day, recovered, and never spoke to any of those people again. I went back to college, got my degree, and built a successful career. Looking back, I'm amazed I made it out without getting caught. My roommate wasn't as lucky. He served 3 years in federal prison. I've never shared this story with anyone because no one would believe me, but it taught me valuable lessons that I still use in business today. In a strange way, I'm grateful it ended when it did, because I probably would have ended up dead or in prison if I had kept going. Story 28. 21 years ago, I was assigned to a DMAT, Disaster Medical Assistance Team. I was young, full of life, and ready to help. We handled some pretty rough emergencies, but one event changed me forever. We were dispatched to a scene knowing it was bad, fatalities and level 1 trauma patients, but we didn't have the full situation. As we flew in, we prepared to deal with injuries and secure any hazardous material leaks or fires. When we arrived, we found 2 dead and 1 severely injured. That kind of scene wasn't new to us. We were trained to handle it. I was tasked with carrying gear, checking for leaks, and making sure there were no other occupants in the vehicle. While inspecting one side of the car, I looked inside the mangled cabin to see if anyone else was there. That's when I saw a child, about 4 years old, trapped under the vehicle. I called for the others and asked for a crush kit. There was no child seat in the car, and no one had been wearing seat belts. It wasn't uncommon, and many people were ejected from crashes. Nothing in my training prepared me for what I saw. The child's eyes were looking up at me, full of fear and a plea for help. Despite knowing the child was essentially gone, I held on to hope. The child's head was the only part not crushed, and the pressure of the vehicle kept what little blood was left circulating. Somehow, the head remained alive for longer than it should have. I was devastated. I resigned the next day. That experience killed something inside me. I took an oath to help people and meant every word, but after that, I couldn't feel empathy anymore. I was numb. Since then, I've been married 4 times, but every relationship fails because my partners realize I lack emotion. I know how to say the right things, but they can sense that I don't mean it. People might think I'm unhappy or angry, but I'm not. I'm not a sociopath. I just don't feel anything. Therapists suggested medication, but nothing worked. I'm not dangerous to myself or others. I just exist, indifferent to emotions. I still try to be a good person, even though I feel detached from everyone, including myself.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.